Welcome to the Outthinkers podcast. Plug in to fascinating minds and breakthrough ideas that are transforming industries and the world. I am your host, Kaihan Krippendorf, founder of Outthinker Networks, a global think tank comprised of corporate strategists, innovators, and entrepreneurs shaping the future of business. If this describes you, join us at outthinker.com. Let's dive into this week's episode. This is the power of platform thinking. You've got the brand, you've got the customers, you've got resources. If you find the right idle assets in your organization, you could actually use platforms as a new way to conceive value creation. Don't get me wrong, I don't believe that linear value chains are over. I believe that linear value chains are here to stay, as they've been for the last decade. But there is a new dominant design in town. We've got linear value chains and platforms. And this is true for startups, but also for established firms. That was Daniel Trabucchi, co-author of Platform Thinking, Read the Past, Write the Future with Tommaso Buganza. As you heard in the highlighted clip, Daniel's goal is to make scientific research as accessible as possible and encourages business leaders to shift their mindset around platforms to explore new avenues for value creation. The idea of value creation has come a long way, where we used to think of it as providing value along a linear chain for stakeholders. Platforms open up an incredible amount of possibilities in making customers and other stakeholders active participants, not just end receivers of value creation. We dive into these intricacies in this episode with Daniel, discussing, among many things, the definition of a platform and how it has changed over time, how it expands past what we've all come to think of as the archetypical platform, the digital ones like Uber and Airbnb, four types of platforms, and how the core of each one, despite their distinct differences, is to create value between users. How it's not just the startups who can utilize platforms. Established organizations have many assets to leverage in getting into the platform space. How platforms offer the opportunity for business leaders to reevaluate their business model with fresh eyes, challenging traditional labels and considering alternate perspectives. Ladies and gentlemen, Daniel Trabucchi. Daniel, thank you so much for being on the podcast. It is such a pleasure to get to meet with you and get to talk to you finally. I'd like to warm us up with two questions I ask all of our guests. The first is, just for us to get to know you a little bit more personally, could you complete the sentence for me? If you really know me, you know that.
Well, this is an amazing beginning. I would say, if you really know me, you know I'm super passionate about what I'm actually doing. I think passion is the real driver of what I do in the professional, but also in the personal life.
Interesting. And so what is it about what you do that activated your passion? How did your passion drive you to what you do now?
Well, this is a question that could actually open up a conversation that can last hours. But I understood that what really brings me into the flow is the ability to understand things and to connect the dots. And my research activities actually ended up there, basically finding ways to connect the various stimuli I get from the daily life and possibly even from my more usual passions like music or movies or whatever it is. And finding ways to bring this into my professional life is something that usually turns me on a lot.
Awesome. I can absolutely relate to that. Very much a Renaissance thinker is what I get from that. So we're talking about strategy today. What's your definition of strategy?
My definition of strategy is probably super influenced by the fact that I mainly deal with innovation. So I tend to link these two ideas, seeing in the strategy the ability to actually set a future goal and finding the best suitable, sustainable way to reach it, the way to make a purpose, something that is actually real and possible.
Yes, awesome. Making a purpose possible and real. I love that. So you have been known for a particular area of strategy of platform thinking. And often when people talk about platforms, they're thinking about technology. And it's a new business model that's technology enabled. And I know that you point out that that's not the boundaries around or the defining characteristics of a platform. Can you just tell me, how do you define platform?
Let's say that the short story here is that I see a platform everywhere. I see multiple customers getting a way to create value together through the work of a central actor, that is the platform provider. What I found super interesting in this field is that everyone talks about platforms. We can talk about companies, just to name the usual suspects, Airbnb, Uber, Amazon, Netflix, and all the others that literally change our daily life over the last decade or decade and a half, probably. And this word platform literally entered from the front door in any executive room, in any scholar room. And okay, that's cool. But I think that over the time, over the years, this word lost somehow its original meaning. We ended up talking about platforms, referring to everything that is digital, that is a digital service, that is happening through a computer or through a smartphone, which, let me say, in many cases, it's correct. But in so many cases, it is not. We started from there. I say we are referring to my co-author as well, Tommaso Buganza. We started from there almost 10 years ago, studying apps, studying mobile applications that were for free and that were not really having a clear revenue model. And we started from data monetization. But digging into platforms, we found out a couple of things. First of all, there's nothing new. If you think about Airbnb and Uber, which are probably the flagship cases of platforms we can talk about, they are transactional platforms. So they are enabling a direct transaction between two sets of customers. So I'm talking about the drivers and the travelers for Uber, for example. And well, it's nothing really different from the idea of the market. We go back in ancient Persia. It was 3,000 years before Christ. And well, the idea is the same. You get together a bunch of sellers so that their aggregate value is higher for buyers and you have more buyers that will attract more sellers and you go on like that. And the same is for other typologies of platforms. If you think about Google, probably one of the companies that is usually referred to as a platform, it doesn't really look like Uber or Airbnb because there is not a transaction. It's what we call an orthogonal platform. So the second customer are the advertisers that are actually buying the attention of the first one. And again, nothing new under the sun in a certain way. We're talking about a business model that was originated in France at the end of 19th century by a company called La Presse with the first advertisement into a newspaper. And we believe that technologies as a role there, they are making these models interesting and possible potentially everywhere. And that's the cool part in our view of platforms. So enabling a different way of creating and capturing value, that's what's platform thinking for us, but to be conceived as an innovation tool. We believe that having the chance to actually understand why not all the digital services are platforms, there is the possibility to see new opportunities also for established firms in fostering innovation through this model of creating value, in seeing customers out there that can create value for the system.
So I love the expansiveness of your definition, and we want to talk about the mindset shifts that need to happen. But to make sure our readers are thinking as broadly as you are about what a platform is, I was wondering if you could just describe some of the certain types of platforms. You talked about the orthogonal platform, the transaction platform, but you also have a product platform, innovation platforms. What are some of the flavors of platforms?
Yeah, let's say that we tend to have an innovation perspective on platforms, and we highlight mainly four typologies of platforms. The original one is product platforms, which goes back to the 80s. Again, nothing new under the sun. The greatest example there is the Walkman by Sony. Just to give you a couple of references, the first Sony Walkman was released in 1978. Can you guess how many models were released by Sony in the first 10 years? So by the end of the 80s.
20? 10 to 20? Like one a year? But I don't know.
250.
Wow, that's crazy.
That's the power of the platform. You know, we are literally talking about a world that is different from the one we are in today. Your suggestion was coherent. One new product per year, you know, the time of new product development. But that's not what they have done. What they have done was creating three basic platforms, which in that case is a basic architecture upon which they were, let me say simply, just to make it clear, they were simply finishing the architecture into a new finished product. And they end up launching basically one new product every month. reducing the development time, the development cost, and having the time to get into every possible market niche.
Like an automotive platform, as another physical example that I see.
Yeah, exactly. You know, this type of platform is super different from the one I was mentioning before. It's internal to the organization in the vast majority of cases. It's related to a physical product. But we like to start from that one because it represents, in our view, the seed of platform thinking. A platform is a basis upon which you can build something. And with this, you directly jump into the innovation platform definition. An innovation platform is a computer, it's a smartphone, where you've got a product that is valuable per se, so you can actually buy an iPhone, even if there are no apps on top of it. Actually, it was happening in 2007. Well, there were the apps developed by Apple. And then they open it up and everyone could actually develop a product on top of it. That's why that's innovation platform. There are complementers joining on top of it.
They can innovate on the platform.
Yeah. It's like the previous one, but open to the world. And you now have this idea of two customers. So you buying the iPhone, but also an Israeli guy is developing an app to actually navigate the world without knowing where you are heading to. And at a certain point, that's Waze. That's a customer. You are actually using the technological infrastructure of the platform. You're using the sensors, the access to the credit card of the users and so many other things. And you're actually paying in many cases for the services that you are getting, the famous 30%. And from this, you've got another step towards this transactional platform, which is Uber, which is Airbnb. Yeah. At that point, the platform is an empty box, meaning that it's worthless without the customers on top of it. And you are not really fostering innovation. You're actually making a transaction. So if type of good or service is defined by the platform provider, but you still have these two customers creating value together for the entire system. And that's the same for the orthogonal platforms. I was mentioning in newspapers, another amazing example is Strava.
Of the orthogonal.
Yeah, for the orthogonal platform.
And I don't know.
Strava is a health and fitness tracker based in California. They are famous mainly for bikers. Basically, what they do is offering a digital service. So you go running, you go cycling, they gather your data and they actually tell you how many kilometers and calories you actually got in that session. And at a certain point, they realized that all those data together, obviously anonymized, knowing where people go cycling into a city can actually be valuable for someone else. And they created Strava Metro. And municipalities start first paying, and now it's a free service. But anyhow, they got the chance to see value in those aggregated data. And here you go with a second customer. The point that is going from the innovation platform to the transactional platform to the orthogonal platforms is the idea of network externalities. So the more people are on one of the sites, the more value there is going to be for the other side to join the platform. The more people use Strava, the more it's going to be valuable for a municipality to actually have those data. The more people use Uber, the more convenient will be for a driver to join it, and so on and so forth. And there you go with the common underlying between these three typologies of platform, which is a value creation that is shared in the ecosystem among the various sites.
Yes, 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 yes. So many implications of that. And I want to go into then, how do you think about building a platform? Because I'm thinking there's probably like a price point and what the level of value is as you grow, and maybe you have to price over time and change and how value gets shared. And then I also want to touch on this kind of linear model and abandoning the linear models. What are some of the mindset changes that need to happen for people? Because I do believe that there is an underlying metaphor by which we think. We're blind to them, but we're visualizing a linear value chain. And then that changes what options we see, what options we choose. Talk to me about that.
You are touching the greatest point, in my opinion. Linear value chain is what we've been trained to in business schools, in business books, and let me say, in the vast majority of established firms, meaning that there is a supplier actually providing you a service or raw material or a work in progress or whatever it is. You take it, you work on top of it, and you actually sell something which should be at least more valuable to your customers. And these are the glasses through which the vast majority of the professional world see the reality. And this was the dominant model for decades. We go back in the 80s with Porter setting the value chain. Now, as users, we understood, maybe consciously, maybe not so consciously, that there is something else. Airbnb entered in our life, Uber entered in our life, and so on and so forth. But there has been this misbelief that platforms are usually digital-based kind of startups. Obviously, we cannot refer to Airbnb and Uber as startups, but still young companies, super innovative companies that were born digital not too long ago, possibly in the Silicon Valley or somewhere around the States. And they are platforms. That's the kind of usual belief that's around the world, in our opinion. And well, this is not true. That's the kind of mindset shift we are trying to bring on the table. What if an established firm with a linear value chain can actually start understanding that next to the linear value chain, there is another model? There is another way of conceiving value creation and value capturing. Well, let me make an example. Here in Europe, there is a company that was founded almost 20 years ago in Stockholm that is called EasyPark. And that's a mobile app that is enabling people to pay the parking lot, basically in the vast majority of municipalities around Europe. They started from Stockholm, and then municipality by municipality, they start getting new customers on board, new users and new municipalities. Well, here in Italy, there is another service that is called Telepass. That, as a longer story, it was born in the early 90s. And that is able to actually offer the same service. So to let you pay the park basically in all the municipalities around Italy. The difference is that for EasyPark to get diffusion took 5 years or something like that. While Telepass did it, I think in a matter of months. And the point is that Telepass is a linear value chain company, is an established firm with a long history that is coming out as a spin-off of the company that is managing the highways in Italy, that was managing the tolling system. We've got this thing that when you get to the barrier, you can actually go through it without stopping there and paying with coins or with a card.
Some kind of RFID tag or something.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's the point. And well, to make a very long story short, they spent a lot of years in a monopoly by law. At a certain point, the market was open and they start feeling the need to foster innovation. And platform thinking was there for them. They actually understood that one possibility was to develop new services and going out in the market, trying to find customers to offer them new services. Or they could actually open up themselves to find new customers that could offer services to their customers. They created a transactional platform, which is called the Telepass Pay, that is offering the same service I was mentioning before. So you go there with your app and you pay the parking lot if the municipality is accepting it. But now think about the difference from a municipality perspective in getting an email or a phone call by a startup based in Stockholm that you never heard of, that is trying to send out to create this new platform. And now think about one of the most famous brands in the country that everyone knows about, that decided to foster innovation, not investing only internally, but looking outside and finding a new way to get new customers while offering a new service to their old customers. And well, this is the power of platform thinking. You've got the brand, you've got the customers, you've got resources. If you find the right idle assets in your organization, you could actually use platforms as a new way to conceive a value creation. Don't get me wrong. I don't believe that linear value chains are over. I believe that linear value chains are here to stay, as they've been for the last decades. But there is a new dominant design in town. We've got linear value chains and platforms. And this is true for startups, but also for established firms.
Got it. I know we're reaching towards the top of our time with you. I think that maybe a way to capture where I think that our audience wants to go next in one question is, what are the first steps? So I identify, I've got idle assets, I've got relationships, I've got a brand, I've got capabilities, and that could give me a head start in creating a platform. Strategists who finish listening to this, they're going to buy your book and we're going to ask you soon, how can they find you and learn more from you? How can they take your new course that you're launching? But they're going to work tomorrow and they're asking, okay, what do I do first? How do I start?
My suggestion is step back. stop for a while, take a bit of time. I'm not talking about months. I'm talking about half an hour to step back from the reality that you think you know about your organization. Step back from the roles of the stakeholders in your life, labeling customers as customers, suppliers as suppliers, and everything else. Our fourth suggestion to follow the platform thinking process is take the time to go through the business model canvas of your firm. Not because I believe that you don't know the business model, but to force you to ask yourself even obvious questions about how you create value. And then step back and ask yourself if someone else can see value there, if there is someone else that can join this system, if there are other relationships that could be enabled by the stakeholders around you to see new innovation opportunities. Another amazing case is John Deere that created this data-driven platform around the farmer, bringing in the system other stakeholders that are part of the linear value chain that has always been there, but they are treating them in a different way. Now there are seed producers, fertilizer producers, the farmers that were the primary customer buying the tractors, and so on and so forth. Part of the same platform in which they are all creating value for the other parties and exchanging value on top of it. I think that stepping back and looking for a different way to conceive the relationships that you are into is the first step to platform thinking.
I love it. So you can step back and look at your business model and say, let's not call them customers or suppliers or channels or substitutes or complements. Just maybe those five you could start with. Let's just call them agents or something, and that will start loosening your thinking. Fascinating. So I wish we had more time with you, but you produce great content for people to be able to engage with you. Certainly getting your book, Platform Thinking, Read the Past, Write the Future. You have a new Coursera course coming out. How else can people who listen to this and want to continue learning from you and adopting this platform thinking that you've detailed out so elegantly, how can they continue to learn from you?
Well, I started talking about passion, so I cannot close if not going back to passion. Platform Thinking started as a research project. What we tried to do over the last 10 years was practicing what we preach. So we tried to build a small platform, even though not super clear in terms of definition in this case, regarding our work. On platformthinking.eu, there are all the latest updates we are actually working on. The book is the Keystone Project that we worked on over the last years. It's actually an interactive book, so it's full of QR codes that are bringing to the other projects we've got. The podcast talking about platforms, Sim Platform, which is our conference on the field, the courses on Coursera, and we are now launching Platform Thinking for the Metaverse that is kind of bringing to the other perspective that we have. We believe that platform models are here with us. Some of the cases that are in the book will be old very, very soon. But we believe that the models behind those stories could be here to stay. We were talking about newspapers founded in the 19th century and the market coming from ancient Persia. So we believe that those models can even be used to read the reality around us that is coming. So we're working on the metaverse, on generative AI, to understand how platform thinking can help us in understanding these technologies breakthrough that are coming.
I love it. Well, thank you for doing all of that, for making it so available to us, and for taking some time to share parts of what you have brought to light and to start shifting our thinking. Thank you so much for being here, Daniel.
Thank you to our guests. Thank you to our producers, Karina Reyes and Zach Ness, our editor, and the rest of the team. If you like what you heard, please follow, download, and subscribe. I'm your host, Kaihan Krippendorf. Thank you for listening. We'll catch you next week with another episode of Outthinkers.